suppose I should first of all explain what I'm here for. And just for the purposes of the tape, it's Liz Chappell and Jenny Sloman speaking with Bob and Kerry Crothers at Rosecroft Glen Innes on Friday the 8th of December.
Yep.
Cool. Am I right?
Yes.
Oh, good, because these recordings, they're sort of trying to capture our garden history for the New England, and they will be at the archives in Armidale.
Okay.
We did get around a lot of the old properties, of course, when we had the Garden History Conference in Armidale in 2012. So now we're going a little bit further afield. We've been to people like Bill and Christine Swan at Byron, and of course now here with you, talking about the significant gardens that we didn't capture for the conference.
Mm.
And the idea is to record your gardening experiences, and I think we'd like to talk both about Rangers Valley and Rosecroft. And so that's all recorded for posterity when our gardens may not be as they are, any of them.
You're very welcome, Liz, and thanks for coming.
Thanks indeed. So can we perhaps start talking about Rangers Valley first, to begin at the beginning? Yeah. I know you didn't grow up there, Bob, but you came there as a young man.
In 1952 we came to Rangers Valley, yes. There was no garden much in those days.
Oh, yes, there was a very, in the homestead, there was a very significant Victorian garden with star and moon-shaped beds in the lawn and then dahlias and some roses, rose arches, and fountains made out of boiling down, rendering tubs where they used to kill the wethers and render them down for tallow back in the 1880s or something. And up at top of where the dam is now, there was still a big pile of wood where one of the tanks must have been, and that's where they would have killed, because that was sort of almost the centre of
Where the actual Rangers Valley dam is now.
Yes, at the top of where the dam is now. Yes,
On the northern end of the property then?
No, it was sort of nearly the centre, because you see then after that returned soldier blocks were sort of all up there, because that all got sold off when in 1952 that was divided.
Excuse me.
Up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And there was a lot of paving stone, granite stonework.
Did it?
I think they must have. Mm. Yes. And before that, perhaps, which could have only been an ornamental lake over from the stables, which was built by Chinese wheelbarrows.
And is that the one in front of, behind the manager's house and between the manager's...
Do you know where the hay shed is, down where the stables are, down on the flat. The old shearer's quarters, not the shearer's quarters that we used for the pony camp. No, the really old shearer's quarters.
Right, everything down was further nearer to the river.
Yes, yeah, right, well, Cam Creek really.
Yeah.
And the river. Mm. See, Cam Creek and the Severn River joined just below the house, and that's where the water was pumped from there right up to the wool shed, and then gravitated back down again.
So the early garden had a good water supply.
Yes, it would have. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's.
So Bloxhams may well have had Chinese gardeners.
They probably did, because the Campbell brothers took it over in about 1892, I think. Mm-hmm. After there was a crash,
that was in the 1890s.
They went broke. I mean, whatever you call it, and bankrupt. So the bank took it over for about 3 or 4 years, I think, and then sold it to the Campbell brothers, who then so they were the end of the century. And they built the sort of the billiard room and improved the homestead and that other big front wing, and that was built in 1907.
So the original homestead faced the river, am I correct?
I think it would have, yes.
And it had that very curved stone path, it's there.
That's right.
Stone path with a, you know, very distinct camber.
Yes. And it would have probably been four main rooms and then a detached kitchen, and there was a big bread oven, huge bread oven, and then all the sort of the dairy room and all that sort of
thing. So they were all there when you first came to Rangers Valley?
Virtually. Well, not all of it, because Mr. Crothers had made it sort of more modern with the inside toilet and things back in the after 1952, and because that was still very much war rationing for building supplies and things.
Oh, yes.
So
there wasn't anything available, or very little choice.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so...
household things.
And he made that curved veranda out the front as well. Mm-hmm. Well, when you say it faced the river, it probably didn't. It probably faced the more to the east, to the stables. It was both.
Yes, because there was the
you can sort of see from that curved veranda and what is now that courtyard, there was a sort of an entrance there that came in to the original, you know, rooms. Yes. So
was the garden as big? Was it?
Well, it was when certainly when we came. I think it would have been. Yes. Yeah. But I, you know, it just amused me to see these moon and star shaped beds.
Well, see, the old photographs of Saumarez were like that. I think there was a heart shape, a diamond shape, all cut with a spade into the lawn.
And they were sort of the fashion then, towards the end of the 19th century. Then,
well,
Victorian times,
definitely Victorian. So,
were they edged in brick or
no? Just cut with a spade and.
No.
There was, when they had the exhibition of old gardens here, some 6 or 8 years ago, there was a painting that I believe Barry Gray lent. Do you?
Yes.
It was Barry Gray,
I think that's correctly. Right.
And that was of Rangers Valley, in the Campbell's time.
Yes, that's right. Definitely Campbell's time.
Yes.
It couldn't be copied because it had a beveled glass in the frame.
Oh, right.
And,
that was going to be my very next question, whether you had a copy.
Would
you have? You'd have to take it all to pieces then.
And I mean, Barry didn't want that, of course.
No.
I suppose he'd still have it.
I might get in touch with them because there are people who can now digitise it. Steve Wright, I've taken. Photographs in glass to him, and he's photographed them.
It might have been ten years ago, and I mean, things have come a long way in that then. So
that is fairly representative, I guess, of the garden in the 1930s, 1940s.
Oh, definitely, yes. Well, even 1920s. I mean, as I say, the Campbells would have spent their money on enlarging the house in 1907, and we just know that because above the billiard room, up in the ceiling, there was 1907 chalked into some of the beams up there. And I mean, in those days, it would have been a considerable amount of money that they would have had to spend to build that billiard room and the other big other wing, which we used as a bedroom, and now they use as the dining room.
So then you came there to live. You were still a single chap at that stage, Bob, with your parents.
1952, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And your mother was a keen gardener?
Very keen, yeah.
So can you think back to some of the imprint that she put onto the garden at Rangers Valley?
Oh, not really. Liz, we were just so busy doing everything outside rather than the garden there. But no, I can't, can you?
No, she was, you know, old Billy, who was the the groom, as well as he used to look after the stallion and things, but he was also the gardener, and he was always up before daylight, and he had an old cattle dog that used to pull the hose around, so the hose all was always wrapped up with rags and things where the dog had... but he used to pull it around after old Billy. Mrs. Crothers was probably... She would have put in a fair few roses and things, I think, and keen on the annuals. I mean, she had a lot of annuals and things, yeah. So I don't think structurally she probably... did much, yeah. So
sorry, I'm so quiet, but I have a fair crook of this damn flu.
Have you got that?
It's been a shocking thing. Elton and I had it back in September, and we've still got a bit of a residue of it.
Oh, but anyway,
you probably don't want to hear that, but it does hang on.
Yeah. So, and then Mrs. Crothers, when we came down, or she came into Glenrule, and then. And then after that, they moved back up to where, you know, the Mackays, the manager.
Oh, yes.
And she and, our mentor really by then was old Will Frances Fennell.
Oh,
yeah.
Remember them, yeah?
Yes. The growers of begonias.
That's right.
Supreme begonias. Yes.
Well, Cess was just, he really was a gardener's gardener.
Mm.
And he, as you say, grew the begonias and poppy plants. Cole McIntosh out of Clavo used to buy the poppies, and you'd buy them, they're tiny little bits of greenery and roots like this, because he had a heated seed bed and he'd really get them going before he put them in, and Cole used to put them in by the hundreds.
He used to do the most amazing displays at the show with his exotic
begonias. Yes. Well, he had a glass house heated with hot water, and we had
a donkey. Was a gardener out there then?
Well, Cess wasn't. Wilf, his brother, was. But Cess sort of advised. I mean, they grew up in England, in Surrey, I think.
Excuse me.
Yep. You're right?
Yeah.
And Cess used to tell me that he when he was a boy, his father was a gardener in one of the big gardeners. I can't tell you which one in England. And he used to, just for fun, go round the hedgerows and graft roses into the briar hedges. You know, you can imagine that, can't you?
Yes. What an asset to have. That was your first garden, Kerry.
Well, he was my mentor, really lent me books and things. So, he knew a lot. I mean, and then his daughter, Cecily, was an accountant, and she moved over to... she would have had everything of his. Yes. And he lived in Glasson Street on that dog leg.
Yeah.
Going in Glasson Street, and that's where the glass house was. Mm.
So with his help and advice, what imprint could you feel you left on that garden at the homestead?
Well, I was going on to say Mrs. Crothers moved up to the manager's cottage, and she and Wilf would have put all the peach trees, all the hedge things, and then I don't know that I really did a lot. We put in a big arch for no reason at all, that we put
the stone one.
No, that stone one. That all that stonework was there, and and that pond. Which Mr. Crothers was always terrified the kids would fall into and drown. So he had this ugly big cover put over the top of it, but I don't think it's there now. And all the levelling and things, all that was.
So the landscaping was sort of done.
All done.
By the Campbells or the Bloxhams or the Campbells or whoever.
Yes. So, and then, I don't know.
Did you make new paths or anything like that?
Not really, no.
So the access remained basically the same?
Yes, definitely. Mm. Yes, so, you know, there wasn't a lot of input into it. Yeah. I can remember... we had the Governor General's wife come one day, and I was very young bride didn't know what to do, took them around the garden, and she said, oh, you must, this must be a, whether it was the autumn or the spring, I can't remember, but anyhow, this must have been the other season garden, because she reckoned there wasn't, she would have been used to really top gardens.
Flowering all the year, yes.
And of course, you were new to this climate, Kerry.
No, I came from Armidale.
Oh, right.
Why had you placed
Gunnedah?
No, my family, both mother and father, Armidale for several generations.
Oh, well.
Had to get out of there, so my mother said.
Didn't go very far.
No, and my sister went to Inverell.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so, anyway.
But, Kerry, were those trees big trees?
The elm trees?
Yes.
Well, there again, yes, they were.
Mm. So they're very old then?
Well, yes, they would have to have been... Oh, well before the turn of the century.
Right.
And they would have been all watered, I reckon, by horse and cart dray, to get them going. And they did quite good. But when we were there, the longage corn beetle got into them. And I can remember Mrs. Lowry, she, tried to say something about it, but she said there's really nothing you can do because they were too big. Well, I suppose in those days there mightn't have been injectables.
No.
It would have just had to have been she said, well, the only thing you can do is cover them and cover the ground, for a full-size tree. Yeah, but they're still going to a degree.
The traditional English elms, the ones that sucker like crazy.
Although they do sucker, but they weren't as bad as some of them, so whether it was a good strain or what, and I suppose the stock were in there a fair bit, so they would have kept the suckers down fairly well.
Mm. I think they could well have been the foundation stock for a lot of the other elms around Dundee and Ranges Valley, around the old homestead.
Well, possibly.
Our elms are probably some of the oldest. And like most of the people around Dundee, we weren't like Owen Croft's forebears who came out with the luxury of bringing things like that.
So they
would have been gleaned from cuttings.
Yes. Well, that's right. And you see, Ranges Valley went up to Dundee in those days.
It did, yes. And a lot of the people who
worked
at Ranges Valley
the
then
Dundee people.
Yes, that's right. I don't know. To me, they're a slightly different elm to what they are at Stonehenge. I don't think they would have been, because the Stonehenge ones are sort of slightly rounder.
Yes, they're not as... Ours are more of a pyramid, a much taller tree.
Well, I don't know, but they're not as well. Maybe they are.
Their climate, probably. It's tough to get things going out there.
And it is definitely several degrees warmer out there than
it is
down in that little frost hollow where Stonehenge is.
There's palm trees in Ranges Valley. Would they have been from the late Victorian times?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean that went with the times. Yes, and there was some lovely big crabapple and Ely-eyed crabapple. I remember, but I don't think it's still there.
And some of those very Victorian shrubs. I think there's an Eleagnus and Mahonia.
We were looking at them last time because they were flowering.
We've never
seen anything quite like them.
Yes.
There's not many Mahonias.
And I can remember there being an Akiba, the chocolate vine.
Oh, yes.
Because there was quite a few... Torulosis, I suppose they were, but pine trees going down that axis to the river, and so it was sort of fairly shaded, and it was doing well there. And these here could be American elms or Canadian or something. These aren't the same here.
And then from the old homestead, you lived in the other homestead on Ranges Valley for a period of time?
Well, we lived when we were married in 1958. We lived for 18, 20 years there.
Yes.
And then we went down to Armidale for a couple of years and then came back to what is now the manager's cottage that Mr. and Mrs. Crothers had lived. Well, it was built as a manager's cottage and then they sort of extended it to...
Kerry, you didn't build it then? It wasn't built for you and Bob?
No. It was built for a manager and then Mr. Crothers decided that he would move back from in town back out there and then he went down to Ben Dooley at Barrel after that. So, moved around.
What about the garden at the manager's?
Well, I was saying that's Mrs. Crothers really did that. So I've only ever really inherited gardens. I've never created them.
Well, I've given you credit for a number of things in the second homestead there in the manager's homestead, like the rose arbor around to the east. Would it be? It's a very tall rose arbor. And there was a yew at the front door. I thought only somebody who knew their plants would plant a yew.
Oh, right. Oh, yes. Yes. That, yeah, okay.
So you were claiming credit for those?
Yeah, I claim credit for those. Yes. I was going down to say down at the big house, we were given some wrought iron posts, four posts that came from Melbourne, Sir Ellerton Beckerbob. Where did those posts come from that we made that big arch down at the valley? And I didn't know what to do with them, so I made that, and it was too high to put roses up, so we ended up putting Virginia creeper over it. It was going nowhere really. I didn't know what to do with them.
Well, there's a photograph of the homestead too, and I guess that'll be about 1960s, where one of those front gables is quite covered in a creeper.
Oh, yes. Well, it was.
I've seen that one.
That was a Virginia creeper too?
And it was there's two things called Virginia creeper, isn't there? So that would have been the not good one. I mean, the one with all the claws and...
So I think we've got quite a few things at home that came from the Rangers Valley Garden, and that would be one.
Possibly.
Pointing out of your bricks.
Yes, and you were saying that you keep your windows open and that's about it.
I've also seen photographs at that time where there's a splendid lot of dahlias.
Yes.
Whether that was Mrs. Crothers' time or your time, where you came in through, and it looked as if the gateposts had been moved in that photograph. I'll show you later. That the garden might have been made a little bit either larger or smaller.
Well, just not long before we left the valley in 80 or whatever it was, we did sort of redo the fence line to what it is now.
Well, and that would be it, because I remember standing there with Helen looking at them and saying, oh, it looks to have not been quite the same place.
Yeah, well, there was a road that used to go from the shed right round the fence, and that fence was orange triumph roses and dahlias, always. And then we decided that wasn't a good idea to have that road going past the house. You either came in one way or came in the other, and then sort of brought the tennis court more into the garden than Mr. Crothers would have put the tennis court in, and because they had a lot of tennis when they first came here. I mean, that was the main entertainment. It was nice having those elm trees to sit under, but we sort of then brought them into the garden.
Pushed the fence out a little then, or?
Well, yes. Well,
a few metres anyway.
Well, no, we completely took the fence away.
Oh, right.
So,
that's right, yes, of course. Yeah, I know, with the tennis court.
And have you had some momentous family occasions there? Have your daughters been married in the garden?
Kim was married up at the manager's house in about 81, I suppose. Oh, no, it must Yeah, no, it wouldn't have been. Anyway, I can't remember the date. And then Susie was married there just not that long before we left. She had the marquee on the tennis court. Mm. So, but, oh, yeah, we always had Guy Fawkes Night with the Kidsville, the district. Mm. That was a big thing. And then, of course, all the pony camp things we had and Christmas parties and things there.
Because Rangers Valley would have had a much larger staff then than it has in recent years, apart from the feedlot.
Oh, well, I think most places did. But nothing to the extent it would have had back at the turn of the century. Because just about everybody in Glen Innes either worked there or their mother or father did. And they all had, you know, a claim to it, which was great. I mean, it was a great
employment for a lot of people.
Yes.
It's interesting you should say that because I've just been getting some information from a couple of the Glen Innes people, Bevy Walters.
Yes.
Her relatives worked out.
Yes, yes.
And then you start going around and you discover somebody's uncle or aunt or grandparent. A lot of people.
We'll see all the Douse and... Who were the other big family that, you know, the Douse were the bookkeeper and then the Greys. Well, the Greys were he was and the Dawsons,
that's right.
And you know, they were all big families.
And all
did they work over two generations?
Yes, I think so. Well, at least two generations anyway. I don't know, just, you know, and some of the parties and things that, well, my 21st party I remember was sort of there, and Mrs. Smeaton did the catering, and a lot of the ladies that, you know, you sort of see all worked for Mrs. Smeaton, you know, so, and they all... I mean, as I say, it was a great introduction because they all knew me because of you know, and you sort of, you feel you had a, well, I can still see, and they were all misses to me.
Oh, that was the generation we grew up with, wasn't it?
It's only the last generation that's been the first name generation, really, isn't it?
It is, yes,
And was the garden a very integral part of these social occasions? You know, was there a big flurry to get the garden?
Oh well, it was always but I think it was always, you know, able to be kept up then because we did have, you know, Billy the gardener, and
you had water.
Yeah, and we always had water. Yes, the river, you know, cursing the pump having to run down and backwards and forwards the windmill. It was a windmill. So when the tank overflowed, somebody had to go down and turn it off. Because you didn't want to flood everywhere. Because I said a lot of it went up to the woolshed, but
it went up and then came back down.
Yeah, but it also, there was the high tank, which is probably still there, but that's the one that used to overflow and, you know, cause a bog everywhere. And go into the machinery shed but they had, when I first went there, there was a huge chook yard that, you know, they had ducks and turkeys and everything, and it was a real...
Sort of self-contained then, really?
I don't know about self-contained, but I think that whoever was the gardener or, you know, looked after that, was very keen on his poultry.
On his own farm and poultry.
And it really was a, because I liked chooks and things in those days, and I was fascinated by the extent of the chook yard.
I remember going to Dundee Primary School in the 50s. There was, you know, always a fairly big contingent of, you know, children of people whose fathers worked on Rangers Valley. So,
right,
yeah. There was a whole string of those little cottages, some of which are still there.
Yes. Well, that's down. where I was talking about, where this artificial lake that the Chinese was down past there, yes. Oh. And it would have been put there, I'm sure, because it was viewable from the house. Mm. That was it would have been a focus from the house. Mm. I mean, because you really couldn't see any of the water of the river much. I don't know that you could see any of the water from the river from the house, but that lake, mm-hmm. you know, was, yeah. And there was a lot of silver poplars and things all around mm-hmm. it, and no willows much, which was good.
Mm. Which was good, because they were planted all the way up the river.
Mm. Mm.
Mm. And it does show a tremendous amount of gardening foresight back then to put in an ornamental water feature, because it was mostly all up with things that had to be practical. You had to pump out of them.
Well, they probably pumped into it, I'd say.
So is there anything we haven't asked you about either of the gardens at Rangers Valley that you felt was significant or that you and Bob really imprinted on?
Were there plants, any particular plants that you were particularly interested in growing and succeeded in growing against all odds or anything like that?
Well, probably not. I just...
Of course, the pollicross is another great thing.
Yes, the pollicross.
That was
a
great social occasion.
Excuse me. 50s and 60s. And, you know, I had a few sales and things out there, but... Yeah, that's a good ring on that.
It was always a house that was accustomed to entertaining.
Yes, because Mr. Crothers was a great entertainer, and we inherited that too. So
and you know the beautiful big gracious rooms in which to do it.
Yes. I mean, we had a it was just now a bedroom, but you know, one area that was the bar that was off the billiard room. Well, it could tell a few pre-marriage stories, I know, and polycross stories and things. Mm. Yes, so
I've heard all the polycross stories.
Yeah, well, Peter's father was very much into those.
Yes, he was. Well, I've heard them from Sandra and Don too.
Oh, okay.
It was obviously a really lovely time in your lives.
Well, Bob and John were great mates. Mm-hmm. He was a great admirer of his. Mm. Racing.
Mm. That brings you on to here then, where you could move with all your required gardening skills.
Well, there again, it was an inherited garden. I mean, I didn't have to sort of do a lot, really. We pushed the fences out. Mm. But, trying to think whether we did push any of the fences out at the valley, but yes, I suppose I did a little bit, and here we did push the fences out considerably, which now you would wish you could bring them back in again, I suppose.
No, I don't know a lot about the history of Rosecroft. Could you just give me a potted history?
I'm trying to think, because Eve Chappell gave me what was his name that took this up? It's always been 50 acres.
Yes.
Hasn't changed.
Was
it Mike Digsby's parents who built the house?
In 31, yes. Can't remember, I saw it not very long ago, just because I wrote it into here, because I thought this is just my little funny birthday book. When it was settled, Rosecroft, we took over in 91, on the 28th of February, according to that.
So the house was built by Gerald Digby.
Yes. Mm. And in 31, and the elm trees would have been planted then, because we've got a photo somewhere or other of the elm trees, with little stakes on them and things.
Oh, yes.
And they're not English elms. They're we think Canadian elms. and don't sucker, but seed very, very freely and come up everywhere. Yeah. So.
So really, the framework of large trees. I can remember coming here at your very first open garden, which was about 95.
What did I say? We took over in 91. Yes, so it probably would have been. Yes. Oh, I'll find out. We'd pushed the fences out by then, and there was a row of ordinary Pinus and Cygnus, the elms on one side of the drive and the pine trees on the other. And as it happened, it's to the north, because I always sort of felt that the north was this way, was much more around that way. I'm still disorientated on...
So that's east.
East is there, so
really?
North's out here. Yeah,
so north this way?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. I would have thought north was there.
Mm. Yeah, still fills me. But they'd had it by then. There was about, I suppose, 7 or 8 of them. And so, you know, cutting them down was a major job. And you can't get rid of the pine tree stump. Because the roots have buttressed up a bit, and so that's why we built the little stone wall we took the dirt from where we put the underground tanks in and filled in behind, covered the stumps, and the stumps are still very intact there after all this time, you know, since what that's 30 40 years 30
I
years,
wish I'd asked
years.
You because I asked somebody else when we cut down our pine driveway, and they said 3 or 4 years and they'll rot out. Of course they didn't, and we ended up getting a stump grinder to get rid of them,
which you can do these days, but in those days
you couldn't.
But we put that access through to the meadow, or whatever you like to call it, the golf course, and there was one stump in that, and it was still very much intact, you know, and that would have been, you know, good 20 years.
Yeah.
So it just shows you how, with the, I suppose it's the rosin in them and things, and we had roses because of the Rosecroft, but anyhow, roses and I don't get along all that well. I've tried to put sort of some roses, but anyhow, I had a lovely bank of Ferdy there, but they were only once in the season, and then they were very thorny and things, so I pulled them out and made the mistake of putting in
a hedge.
Yes.
Oh, a hedge.
Yes, yes.
Not Lanicera.
Anyway, and it's meant to be the mock orange.
Philadelphia.
No, the other one. Because it's an evergreen.
Moraya, but that.
But it's like that.
No, Choicea.
But it's never really flowered, so it still needs cutting, but we have a lot of trouble with blinking broadleaf and the small privet coming from up the paddock. The birds bring it everywhere, and all in that hedge there's a lot of the privet that gets cut along with the hedge. And so that stonework, and because I love a dry stone wall, there's nothing better for a thing, garden, and that's what I tried to do out at the valley, was do a ha-ha fence, which there again didn't really work, but would have been nice. The front fence was just here where these gardens are there, and it was the traditional, Ross, you know, Andrew Ross's
Susie
Ross said, you know, the worst thing you can have is a Dorothy Perkins Rose and a fish pond, and you know, in the middle of in the middle of the house. So that's what was here, a Dorothy yes. Perkins.
Oh, right. It had the turning circle from the drive, didn't it?
Yes, yes.
And the pond in the middle.
Yes, that was
when you had your first open garden, I think that
was it. Well, it wouldn't have had the turning circle. It would just would have come into the lawn. Yes. Mm. Anyhow, she sort of suggested that we take that away and give the house somewhere to sit down on properly, so that's why. Mm. And the pond always leaked anyway, so that was the end of that. And then we had the problem of trying to marry up the two beds to make, and that didn't work, so I thought, right, we'll go the completely different. So we bought in some of the granite rocks, and they were meant to be little they were all meant to be little, but anyhow,
they don't stay little.
Yeah, they say, you know, one foot in 10 years, and so that's what that was meant to be, but.
So the tree line further out, that's all grown since you and Bob moved here and planted them?
Yes. You can't, there's no, well, the fence line, you mean?
Yes, that was all
in the paddock, And and then what they call the 5 acres was sort of the next one, and well, there must be, I don't know how many hundred trees in that now.
This is in the golf course, coming down.
So
it's beautiful now.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit more about that. Was that a collection of favourites, or really just a random?
Well, it was favourites, but I would never do it again because I think you want to have groups of trees, and you know, I'd sort of see one and think, oh, that's lovely, and you'd go round. That's the best way of knowing what will grow, is go around and pick what you like that's in the area.
Yeah.
But you want to put in a group of at least 7 or 9. You just don't want to put one of each. Mm. But the oaks have done, from Gyra. She went overseas and got all the oaks.
Not Pam Yeoman.
No. Who was the McKee gardener?
Jackson.
No, before her. She died and lived right out onto the eastern side.
Nolling Miller,
I'm sorry. Mm. She'd gone over and collected, and her daughter had gone and collected a whole lot of oaks from America and brought the seeds back, and she gave me quite a few. So the... And I found the oaks have really loved it.
And you grew the seed.
Yes, I did. Oh, yes, she gave. Yes, so that's it's the willow oak and some of the red oaks and things. And so they've done really well. So I wish that there was just a collection of oaks out there, which perhaps a few maples to go with it. But I suppose in a way there's. That's what there is. I mean, and then
it looks very beautiful.
Yeah. When we came, it was a very much of a underground stream. So I sort of planted the willows there, thinking they'd suck up the water, but that was a mistake. And then we put the access of golden elms in, and they've come good. What 20. 30 years later.
It's a wonderful asset now for any of us to see what will do well.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yeah. Well, Susie Ross did, she suggested quite a lot of stuff, mainly up at the top, but that was one of each. And I'm surprised that Susie thought that way. Yeah, she was very keen on the silcovers. Well, I can't see them. That they've got any merit at all, because in those days the Dutch elm disease was getting the elms in England, and that was supposed to be the substitute for the elms.
But they have very interesting bark, don't they, the Silcovas?
Well, I'm not close enough to mine to bother with it. Yes.
Robin Jackson's got them where you can actually see them from the sitting room.
Yeah, well, of course, the most interesting bark is the crepe myrtle. I just, yes.
Oh, yes. Does it do well here for you?
Yeah, it's done okay, yes. Mm. I haven't, you know, I haven't made a big feature of them, but there are a couple in the garden. Mm-hmm. And the old part of the garden, which would have been with the old cottage, I don't know its real history, but I imagine it would have been built in about the 1840s, because it's not on stumps, it's on bed logs. The doors are tiny.
Is it would have slab had an out.
No, it's not slab, but I don't know what you call it, but it's a sort of slab with a cleat sort of put over the top, and then it's lined with tar paper.
Oh.
And you know, and I think Waters put some sort of electricity, but I think if anybody had seen it, they probably would have been electrocuted on sight. Not.
Oh, but it's wonderful that it's survived.
Well,
so many changes.
Well, yes, and there was a big old macrocarpa over the top of it, and it came down. I mean, it's got a 7-foot girth when we cut it down, and the water just... gallons of water just came out of it, so it was just amazing that it had lasted as long as it did. And when the big branches came down, they missed the cottage. They took the fence, they took the driveway, but they right over the top of the cottage, and they missed that, which was great.
Mm. Yeah. So if it was built on bed logs, it may not have had an iron roof either. Was it shingled or bark? Or perhaps it's been replaced.
Well, it would have been replaced, and I can't say what it would have been, but I think it would have had to have been bark.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would have been shingled, because I don't think it would have been that...
Flash?
Yeah, flash.
So that's the oldest part of the garden, Kerry, apart from the now-departed macrocarpa. What else remained from that stage?
Well, there's a big... I call it the pom-pom tree, but it's a pink flowering peach, which is different from most. There is a carajong there, which I think the possums probably eat once a year, and but at least a carajong could grow. Big old wisteria, which the archway fell down last year. But it's, you know, not as old as the one out at Deepwater Station, but it's still there. What else is around there? One of those.
Portugal laurel?
No.
Not a petunia.
No, that's not petunia, is it?
No. Mexicana, and what's the other one? And there's a big one, very big one at Brandon. But they would have been Mrs. Digby's day, those ones. But there's one up there that's older than that, I think. Yeah.
So we're looking at the glossy leaf just here.
But they're an unusual leaf, aren't they? Does it get a berry or?
Yeah,
a
berry and a red berry and the white smelly flower.
Fatinia, one of the old fatinias.
You've got the fatinia hedge. No.
We'll have a look later.
Yeah, I should.
Cretaceous?
Cretaceous. One of the Cretaceous. Yes. Cretaceous Mexicana, isn't there?
Does it smell ghastly?
Not.
Not like.
No.
You've got them at home, 2 weeks a year they smell ghastly.
Yes. No.
Now there was one at Glen Lee, just straight out from the kitchen, living room. With enormous big berries on it.
Well, this one, you wouldn't say enormous big berries, you know, they're this size, and hanging in lovely bunches. These two are red, and then there's the yellow one the other side. But I sort of did have them identified. And I think they are, and there's
it's not a
really
rowan-y type thing.
No. There is a very big one at just over the sort of the glasshousey part of Brandon.
Yes, I do know.
And
it's sort of between there and the stable building.
Yes. And we've never really worked out what they are. We've decided.
That's taken us around that direction.
Yeah, we put the dam in when we first came because it's not on town water, and to have put us on town water, it was going to be the same cost as putting the dam in, and all our neighbours coming from where the town water ended, which is on the curve of Cramsey Crescent, would have all had to have paid rates on it, and we reckoned it wasn't the way to win friends and influence people. So, and then we don't bother pumping out of the dam anymore because that helped to start the garden. It was a real struggle with water to start because we'd had to sort of pipe up right round the perimeters trying to put the natives and things in to get them going to start with.
You've
and
got
all
a whole native area down there, haven't you?
But it's didn't ever work the way I wanted it to. Yeah. And the blinking box elder of the seedlings of those have all sort of come through it, and the thought was great because the water and the birds.
So you liked experimenting, really?
Well,
yeah, to a degree, anyway.
Yes, I suppose so. But it was a sort of it was just happened. I mean, you know, I'm not a good gardener because I'm not a planning gardener. I mean, I don't keep records the way you do, I wish I had. But things, you know, and people, you'll buy something or people give you something and you'll walk around with it for ages thinking, now, where will I put it? Instead of, now I want something there and this is the spot for it, and then go and buy it.
It's interesting with the natives, though, Kerry, because a lot of people, particularly when they're starting out gardening, assume that's going to be the easiest thing because they're indigenous plants. What would be your observations on that?
Because this is New England, there's not a lot of natives that are garden attractive that will grow in this climate and area, particularly not on the real granite country. When you get that real sandy granite country, things will take off, but this heavier soil, they won't. And even though it's nice to sort of want to attract the little birds and things, they'll come to the English. I like to think that you can mix the two, though. There's probably a native as well as an exotic that would fit the same area. But I think that it's much easier and quicker to grow exotics than it is to try and battle with the natives. I don't know that...
My sentiments exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I think that people get that do have a successful native garden are on the very coarse granite, and probably for those first couple of years have a very reliable water supply.
The only thing I've ever seen that really grows many success around here as natives is bottle brushes.
They
seem to grow.
Well, then you've got to keep on top of them and prune them.
I know, they're
nicely. But there again, I think they're more for the granitey country than I've got some bottle brushes there that have done not too badly, but and you sort of think, because I love the little birds, and I've got a whole flock of little red brow, you know, ones now, which I thought I was going to have, you know, a garden full of everything, and oh, I'm a flight of goldfinches. Oh, look at those two rabbits out there. In between the...
That's the trouble, isn't it? That's what you need a cat for.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I had a dog that was trying to eat them too. But, yeah, but anyway.
I've got a very good cat at the moment. He's a one rabbit a day at least.
Well, see, we've been bereft of rabbits for about 5 years. There's a few little ones this year, but we had the Khaleesi through...
Golly.
...very powerfully, and we haven't seen a rabbit in the garden.
Really?
Well... The cat I've got now is 11 years old, and I'd say he really hasn't learned to catch rabbits properly.
No, he would have been bringing them home and showing them to you anyway.
Would be.
I had Stuart Boydlaw here the other night, but of course he got one, but the others didn't turn up. they didn't get invited to the party.
Now, as we're looking out here, we've got a lovely variety of foliage, Kerry. Is that a deliberate...
Yes, I think it is. Unconsciously deliberate, probably, if you can call it that way. But, you know, I'm told that these are the only native gum trees, you know, old gum trees that are in the gardens that somebody looked at. That most of the gum trees get cut down first. And then
yes.
No old ones, yes. Mm-hmm. But this one here that's actually in the garden, the others aren't, they're only in the eyesight of the garden, does lose its branches quite often, and it's had a death sentence on it, and we've had, you know, from about $2,000 to $10,000 to cut it down. But, but it's home to so
but
many
it's
things.
Home to your lovely wisteria.
Well, it is now, which is probably a mistake as well. That's a white wisteria, which is lovely.
Look beautiful when it comes out.
But look, possums live in it, cockatoos nest in it, ducks nest in it, all sorts of echidna. We've got a hole underneath. Yeah, I mean, it's just, I'd hate to lose that. We had an open garden here, and Robbie Dalhunty and Annabelle had a blanket picnic underneath it, and the next day came out, and there was this ginormous branch that had speared straight into where they were sitting. Mm-hmm. I never did tell them, but...
Well, this garden has been... a host to many, many functions like that, I think, Kerry.
Yeah, well, even before we came here, the Waters were very generous with their, you know, having Rotary and things here, and I think the Digbys probably were too. So, yes, it's sort of...
But you created that area out there where there were lovely concerts and
yeah, see, that was, as I say, the front fence went across the middle of where that garden is there. And then where the driveway, that was the end of the garden that way, and before you get to the dam was the end of the garden that way. So we certainly have pushed it out, you know, from there, as most people do in the country.
When you can. And you've quite changed, I think, the area under the elms out this northwest it would be. Where I think you've had functions in the past too, where the fountain is and a lot of Bucks's hedging.
Oh, well, yes, I mean, we put the fountain there. We had a little hedge round it at one stage, and we had a garden round it at one stage, but nothing ever worked, so it's just now the stone wall that... and that seems to work, but the wind blows. If you have a fountain going all the time... Even just as a splash, the wind takes the water, and you've got to have a running tap into it to keep it.
The water
yeah. So you know, that's why most fountains are turned off, I think. This one we don't ever turn off, but that doesn't splash.
It sounds lovely too, though.
Yes.
It's the sound that's so good.
But then that's a mistake too, because the berries and the leaves and the petals all fall into it. Yeah, we cover it up when the berries are falling, which looks ugly. But at least keeps the
you're having to scrape it all out, which is a shocker of a job.
Well, we've done that a couple of times since we've been here, but
And you've had somebody do some beautiful stonework that was all done in your time, I think.
Yes. Well, as I say, I love the dry stone walls, and I think they're worth their weight in gold as far as landscaping is concerned. Yeah.
And you've opened this garden, numerous times, probably too many to count. I think you were in the very first lot of gardens to open in this area with the open garden scheme.
Quite possibly. I have to keep check on that.
What have you learned from opening your own garden?
I think keep meeting people who are like-minded, people wanting to have a gift from here and me receiving a gift from them, catching up with friends that you didn't expect to be coming, people that you know quite well and you had no idea they were going to be in the group that were here. That's always been an amazing thing, I think. And having that goal to the date to have your garden looking as good as you can get, and I think that's probably the best thing that you can have, because
a deadline.
Probably.
And of course, being a sucker for punishment, you were also heavily involved in the open garden scheme when it was operative in this area, Kerry, as a selector.
Yes.
Could you talk a little bit about that experience?
Well, there again, it was very much a learning curve. You see what other people have done and you can incorporate a wee corner of theirs into your own. You meet very interesting people and learn where nurseries are through it, and probably I've always done that a bit because Mr. and Mrs. Crothers had a place down at Barrel, and we used to sort of go around their open garden, which wasn't the open garden scheme, but it was their open gardens, and that taught me a lot, I think. Then you sort of don't realise that you're absorbing design of gardens, but you do when you sort of suddenly realise, well, that works because it frames or is an access to something or other, or it's there's a view there, yes. It got me into a lot of gardens that I never would have been able to or dreamt that I could, and I just think it's a crying shame that they have folded up as a scheme, but it serves them right because they didn't let us run the gardens the way we wanted for this area. I mean, each area, I think the locals know their path much better than being told to follow something. And yet the open garden scheme people that I met, even away from this area, were all very friendly, cooperative people. But,
I think there was a great common interest, and, of course, as they said right at the end, they were the organisation, or we were the organisation, that really opened people's eyes to the potential of visiting gardens.
Well,
it's now been picked up, of course, by numerous charities.
Every organisation and charity.
Yes, I think that may have happened anyway, as I said, the barrel gardens were long before the open garden scheme, and the Melbourne gardens, not that I've been through a lot of them, but they were running before the open garden scheme, and I think it would have happened with or without, you know, and well, people just do love gardens. I mean, it improves the value of your establishment no end. I mean, a house without a garden, it can be a mansion, and you see them sticking out like sore thumbs, and yet you can see the most humble cottage with a interesting garden that really appeals to you, and therefore the value of it in your mind would go up enormously.
Well, I have to comment here on a wish the local council could subscribe to that philosophy too, because there's talk of another row of trees being removed.
Where's that?
Outside the I'm not even relevant to this. Outside the library.
Shall I turn it off?
You know those beautiful, there's a whole